I may have regret them.
As you turned the recording on, you moved the phone or something, and your signal's gone funny. Can't hear you.
Say what I say. It's just to try and find something to 6 months, and the signal's gone funny because I've lost. I have to re-engage something. Yeah. Shucks.
Now we can hear you, Emma.
You can hear me now?
Yeah, now you better. Oh, now it's
good. I have a problem with the connection here. I can see. No, it's going to go funny. Just wait a second. Let me try and hook onto something else. We'll see. There's a problem with putting yourself into a sakana, which is a question that will come. We'll see later. Which you don't have a panasa. If a person doesn't make his status for panasa, he'll still get his panasa. Lichoira. We have to see that. That's not so posh. There's shkofis. You have to make his status. We've seen that Loshen as well. If you don't make the Ishtadlis, then you won't get the Panasa. That's Hashem's Tanai that he put into the Bria. That's much more complicated how that works. How do you understand? It doesn't do anything, but if you don't do it, you won't get it. And it does do something. Because the Chovas Halavavas doesn't learn like that. Chovas Halavavas learns that your Ishtadlis has nothing to do with your Panasa. We saw Rav Dessler as well. Rav Dessler, the Ishtadlis is there to protect the Betochen you have already. It was a local Shula Panasa. You're not making shtadlis to get panos, you're making shtadlis to protect your betochen. So for sure, and that's in that's in medicine as well. Why would you think not? So in a shkofe, in the way we look at the world and aloha, it's exactly the same. Exactly the same. You have to make your shtadlis, you have to do what you have to do. At the end of the day, you have to know if you get well, you don't get well, Khalida, that's because that's what Hashem wanted, nothing to do with your shtadlis. There's one or two exceptions. We'll see that the Gemara says, colds and whatever. A person has to, you have to keep yourself warm. If you don't, so then you can't say, Akol B'day Shemaim. There are exceptions to that. You put yourself in a sakana, then you must expect sakana things to happen. You know, you can't do dangerous things and then say, Akol B'day Shemaim. Because when you put yourself into a sakana, then the din becomes much stricter. It says when you put yourself into a sakana, then they open up your dinim in Shemaim to see are you really worthy of the protection that Hashem wants to give. And if you're not worthy, then you're going to get whacked. So you me'ira the din. You're putting yourself into a matzah where you now put yourself into a new world called din, and now you're being masak in your life. So for sure, and we see that the Torah is more makpid on shmiras hanefesh. I've mentioned the beragola. It's good to see the last beragola in Chosh and Mishpat, right at the end there on the mitzvah of Shmiras Aguf, Shmiras HaNefesh. He speaks there about the terrible zilzul. When a person's he doesn't guard his life properly, doesn't guard his goof properly. The terrible zilzul, and he says, Ein zilzul apikosus godol mizeh. So it's Shmiras Aguf, Shmiras HaNefesh is a big thing. We see the Israel well, through all the generations, the odd makpid on looking after their lives. Because what else do we have? I mean, it's the greatest maton, it's the greatest gift. It's the few hours we have in this world is the only way you have to get into Lama Ba. How can you be mazalzel that, you know? And also, we see that most of the mitzvahs you do are with a goof. When a person's not well, then it's very hard to do the mitzvahs. It's very hard to do what you have to do in this world. So a person has a chiyuv to look after himself. But having done what he has to do and he's kept his chiyuv of his shtadlis, so what happens afterwards has nothing to do with him. The end results of kulam in Shemayim, and whatever's decreed on the person, that's what's going to be. That's what's going to be. That's for sure. Just want to look at some of the other questions here. Just 1 second. Don't go away. I just want to dredge up the email here. I'm sorry, I only have one machine, so I have to kind of go off Zoom. Just want to open up this email here. I never got a chance to print it before. I'm sorry. So can we apply this logic to the Megaifa? Okay. Or is the likelihood that we will be infected, Chas v'Shalom, not necessarily related to the amount of Ishtadlis that we make? And can we say regarding this that nothing can harm us if Hashem does not decree it, if people don't talk? Okay, slowly. Let's go back to Zoom. Just 1 second. So these questions relate stum, not dafka to corona. Whether you want to call it a magaifa, you don't want to call it a magaifa. That's also a discussion. Is this a magaifa? It's not a magaifa. It looks like, I mean, the World Health Organization calls it a magaifa. Some rabbonim call it a magaifa. Some haven't used the word magaifa. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how you. It's certainly something that's very unusual and something we're not used to dealing with, and that's the problem. We tend to put corona into a special category and we play with special rules, and it's not right. Now, there's lots of sicknesses in the world. There might be 1,000 corona people in hospital, but there's a couple, I don't know how many thousands of people in hospital, a whole bunch of other sicknesses. People are dying every minute from all sorts of things and nothing to do with corona. Corona is it's one of the sicknesses out there, and a person has to do what he needs to do in the world to protect himself. And corona has certain novel problems which forces us to take certain statuses that we haven't been taking. But I'll give an example of Victor Miller wore masks I heard that he was very makpid on in winter that people shouldn't come to shul if they've got colds or flu because you can spread disease. He wouldn't let people kiss a sefer Torah in his shul. He held it spread germs. I remember seeing somewhere that he even wore a mask. I don't know, maybe just once he wore a mask. He was sick, so he put on some kind of a face covering. I'd have to check, but I remember something. Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure, but I remember seeing something about, you know, people wore masks in the East. Wearing a mask is a very common thing. It's not an unusual thing. So today, wearing a mask around Israel has become quite a common thing. You go to Taiwan, you go to China, Japan. People wear masks. The mod makubal, you know. So the lam dafka got to do with corona. Wearing masks long before corona. So we have to be careful not to make corona into some kind of alternative medical issue. So you have to deal with it like you deal with any medical question, you know. Don't put yourself into an x-ray room if you don't need x-rays because radiation is dangerous, you know. So wear a lead suit when you go into an x-ray room, you know. Same thing, yeah, you go into a potential corona place, put on a mask or don't wear a mask, we'll get to that. So I'm saying we have to be careful not to make this bigger than it is. However, the Gemara has some interesting things to say about a magaifa that's very relevant to us and also to the question. What about the tzaddikim? We see very righteous, holy people, big people all over the world getting this and Rahman al-Islam not survive.
Shlomo, you're officially the host. You're going to have to continue talking, eh?
Yeah, why did I become the host?
Because I showed the signal.
No, I lost signal and then it just dumped me out. So whoever's the host, I don't mind. The host gets to buy the drinks, you know. So whoever wants to be the host, be the host. Sorry, where were we? I just had to reset that. There was some interesting things about this magaifa, about magaifas in general. The Gemara in Baba Kama Dachsama says, Magaifa einu mafchin bein tzadik l'rosha. There are certain different rules. The Magaifa says the Magaifa comes in one step. It doesn't have to consult anybody. It just comes. There's other things that have to consult first with the Rabboni Shel before they come. They have to go through all sorts of processes. Cheshboinus. The Magaifa just comes and it's einu mafchin bein tzadik l'rosha, which means that your frumkeit's not going to help. If it's einu mafkin ben tzaddik l'rosha, that means you can be the biggest tzaddik in the world. Think of the biggest tzaddik you can think of. He's in the same position as somebody who's not such a big tzaddik in terms of the magaifa, because it's not mafkin ben tzaddik l'rosha. That means the way you deal with the magaifa is not by doing all sorts of extra frumkeit. You can't get rid of the magaifa by being more frum, because einu mafkin ben tzaddik l'rosha, so becoming more of a tzaddik is not going to help you. But the Gemara goes on and it says, but it does take the tzaddikim first. The tzaddikim go first. And the question is, this touches on the question from the email. I'm not always asking questions the way it is, but this is a question that was in the email as well. And that is the tzaddikim, there's some kind of a korban, there's some kind of a kapara for the door, whatever. So there's a discussion about why the magaifa takes the tzaddikim first. One is because they shouldn't have to see the suffering, because it's going to be a terrible thing to live through and whatever. And they have the schus to be a taken away, so they don't have to see the suffering. They don't have to see. You saw before the World War as well. A lot of the big gedolim were nifta before the war, before the Holocaust. Plenty won't. So obviously, but the biggest question, the biggest issue here is bechira. Is you need to maintain bechira. So therefore, you see that tzaddikim go first because then that keeps the balance of bechira. If the mageifa only took the rishoyim, then it would be very hard to not to do tshuva. So therefore, Kodesh Baruch Hu keeps a balance. There's another reason also is that it's a kapara. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta says that it's a kapara for them. They're in a great place. The Rabbi Yisrael Salanta says they don't have to mourn for them. They're in the right place. They are where they're supposed to be. They're getting their full reward. And we have to mourn for ourselves because we've lost them. We don't have their guidance. We don't have their tzidkas. We don't have the protection in the world anymore. We have to be upset for ourselves. We don't have to be upset for them. He also mentions Yisrael Salanta in the middle of a geifa, you shouldn't mourn too much. You shouldn't be sad too much because he says that causes people to get the mageifa. Simcha and Rishir of Gershon Edelstein says this a lot. You have to make a nice avira b'home. You have to make sure that things are calm. You have to make sure that you're happy. You have to forego a lot of things that you would normally be makpid on because when there's a mageifa, you have to be careful because the anxiousness and the sadness and the worry can actually bring on the mageifa. So that's... it's something a person has to bear in mind as well. So he says there, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta says, I think in Chaf Beis Mechtava, whoa, don't quote me on this, I don't even know Israel yet. I think it's in Mechtav Chaf Beis, but I could be very wrong. I'm not a big expert in this, but I remember seeing that he discusses in the big cholera epidemic that they had to deal with it. He was famous in dealing with that. He says there, you shouldn't mourn too much. We have to minimize mourning when this is on because the and you see that. When there's a mageifa, so we tend to be isolated. We tend to be have a lot of other problems that we don't normally have, and a person can get under the weather. You have to be very careful to maintain high spirits through all of this. So that more chashuv. But we see that the all your as the questioner said, all your davening in shuls and the learning in the Beis Midrash, etc., on an individual level. It's not going to help you because any mafkin ben tzadik or rosha. If this is a mageifa, I'm not relating to corona specifically. If it's a mageifa, the Gemara says any mafkin ben tzadik or rosha, so your tzitzit is not going to help. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be inspired to become more of a tzadik. Of course, when there's something like this going on in the world, you have to look at the reality on the ground and see what it's telling you and what you can improve. There's no way Hashem did this because He wants us to stay the same. The pshat in the Gemara can't be, listen, the Magaif is not mafkin ben tzadik l'rosha. So lomar shenei matat tzadik ota rosha. The Magaif is going to get you, it's not going to get you. So just carry on doing whatever you want. That's why Hashem brought us into the world. For sure Hashem put us in the world because there's some tshuva that each person has to find himself doing. Each person has to do his own cheshbon, look at the reality on the ground and see what the Magaif is telling him. Not push Hashem out the window by being frumed. For sure that's not what He wants from us. You know, Hashem comes out to tell us something and you push Hashem out because you do all these funny mitzvahs and whatever and you think you can become frum and therefore Hashem will go away. No, I know mafkin ben tzadik l'rosha. But a person still has to see that something's going on here and do tshuva. I think that's the biggest ishtadlis. What's this mageifa teaching us about the lives we were leading before the mageifa, that the mageifa needed to come to change us. If we don't change, then this whole thing will have been a waste of time. I had the agosha, I think I mentioned to some of you maybe, I had the agosha going back to the Beis Midrash yesterday. It reminded me of going back to Rosh Chodesh Elul, after having not been in the Beis Midrash since Purim, before Purim. I went back Rosh Chodesh Elul, feeling very wonderful, and it was very exciting, whatever. And 5 days later, I was back in Bidud. And I pretty much never made it back to the Beis Midrash before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I was around a little bit, and then I was back in Bidud again. So, and I wasn't around too much. And I had this agosha, Yubiruchim. Well, I mentioned this somewhere, I don't know where. There was they banned the Shchit in Poland. Before the war, somewhere along the line, Yubiruchim was still around. So Yubiruchim said, when Klal Yisrael has a maila, when they have something and Hashem takes it away, it's because we don't appreciate it. We don't appreciate something Hashem gives you, He takes it away. So he said, people didn't appreciate Kedushas Achila. People didn't appreciate what it means, Kedushas Achila. And therefore Hashem took away the shechita. They didn't appreciate eating kosher. They didn't appreciate kedushas achila. So Hashem took it away. So driving in yesterday, I had this agosha, Hashem took away the Beis Midrash because I didn't appreciate it. I appreciate the Beis Midrash. You take it for granted. I've been in the Beis Midrash for the last 30 years, you know, so my big deal. I'm in this Beis Midrash. That Beis Midrash, where else does a Jew spend his time learning? He's in the Beis Midrash. The Pasuk says, in your Roiv Chesed, I come into your house. Well, what does that mean? I mumble it every day when I walk into shul. And you're putting on your tefillin and you're there. Oh, 1 second. Going into Beis Midrash is because Hashem has Roiv Chesed for us. So I came back to the Beis Midrash in Elul, and I was very fired up. I wasn't going to speak. I wasn't going to take out my phone. I was going to be very frum in the Beis Midrash. But after 5 days, I was sent back in to be dud. So I didn't appreciate it properly. So when I came back yesterday, I was very scared. I still am a little bit that I have to make sure that I appreciate being back in the Beis Midrash. Because if you don't appreciate being back in the Beis Midrash, you take it for granted again, then you've just wasted the last like 6 months of your life, basically, on this Nakuda. It's very important for a person to get personal with this. If you speak to the Lashon Horan people, you know, that's another thing you have to be careful of, is everybody sells his message here. Why did this Magefa come about? Because of Tznius. Who's saying that? The Tznius people. The Lashon Horan people. You know, it's because they don't talk in shul, that the don't talk in shul people. Now, they might all be right, but you have to see what connects to you. You don't ever talk in shul, so the message is not talking in shul. That's not what Hashem's telling you, because I don't talk in shul, so they look a shul alai. Maybe I have responsibility because other people talk in shul and I'm not shouting at them to stop. Okay, so check that out and see. But a person has to make his own cheshbon. What is Hashem telling me? Rav Leuchter gave a Moedika Shia to Yeshiva Bochrim in Yeshiva a while ago. It happened to Yadda Shia by accident. You know, but he was saying that one of the things we see by this corona thing is the cutoff, the detachment of the older people. Older people are very cut off. You can't go visit your grandparents. You can't read your grandchildren's stories. You can't have them sitting on your lap and you tell them stories. Yeah, you can do it on Zoom, whatever, but there's a disconnect here. So Hashem's telling us something about old people. So he said, today the Yeshiva Bochrim don't want to learn from old people. Today the Yeshiva Bochrim want to learn themselves. They want to sit down and learn a Gemara and say their own swaras and say their own mental gymnastics. They're not interested in learning from somebody who knows more than them and older than them and has more experience than them. You know, Reb Chaim Volozhin went to learn by the Goyin when he was already a godel himself. Then he went to the Goyin shir. You know? No, but I know how to learn, so what do I need a shir for? Yeah, now that you know how to learn, now you need to go to shir. You know, but so that's a lesson for Yeshiva Bocha. You know, you're disconnected from the who are the older who are the Zaka and Rosh Yeshivas, the old people. So what are you learning from them? Well, because Hashem took them away. So now what's he telling you? He's telling you that you didn't appreciate properly what it is to learn from older people. So now go find older people, go learn from them. Now maybe you don't, that doesn't mean anything to you, that message. They find your own message. You have to find your own lesson here, what Hashem's telling us. That's obvious. I think that's poshut. But not this to happen again. So therefore, a person has to see what is Hashem trying to get us to change here. But the Gemara is telling you again, Einu mafchin ben tzadik l'rasha. You can't push Hashem out the picture with your tzitkas. You have to make real changes to yourself. That for sure he's telling us. I don't think Einu mafchin ben tzadik l'rasha means you just carry on being a rasha, you'll be fine, because it makes no difference. No. And you see that because what stopped the Magefa was the Keteiris. Well, you can say whatever you want about the Keteiris, but one thing about the Keteiris is it goes up. The Keteiris goes up and it leaves nothing behind. So certainly the Keteiris is telling us that whatever else you want to say about the Keteiris, I'm sure there's deep mystical secrets about it. The Keteiris stops Magefa, and how you say the Keteiris every day. And Reb Chaim said it's a good thing to say. So it's a good thing to say. But anyway, you should say it because it replaces the Keteris, the lips. Fine, good. But at the end of the day, there's another message here. You can go up. You can elevate. You can be bigger. You're more choshev. You're more bigger than you thought you were. You thought you could only function like this. But you see, now you can actually function without all the things you thought you had. Okay, that's another shir, another discussion into that. But I'm just pointing out that the Einu mafchin ben tzadik l'rasha doesn't mean you stay a rasha. But it does mean that you are going to see people who lichayra, you know, how did Reb Chaim Kanievsky get this? You know, he doesn't have any schiot. I know schiot. I know mafchim ben tzadik l'rosha. How did Reb David get it? Stark and gezunt on Rabbi Rufu Shleimer of Dolvi Soloveitchik. How did he get it? He wasn't. Didn't isolate him. And then Lomivin. Well, good. That's it. When your time's up, your time's up. So, Shlomo, don't you remember? You remember Rav Yitzchak Obermeister Zatzal? Shlomo, you'll remember him, yeah?
Yeah, I do remember him, sure.
So Rav Yitzchak had a gewaldic shir between what's called Ech Zekara and Lama Zekara. Yeah, somebody tells you Yankel was nifty. You say, how did he die? Well, he got hit by a truck. Is that why he died? He didn't die because he got hit by a truck. He died because in Shemaim was the decree that he had to die now. How did he die? He got hit by a truck. But why did he die? Because nothing to do with the truck. He died because his time was up. The world tries to confuse you into mixing those two things. How did he die? Is why did he die? You know why he died? Because he got hit by a truck. That's not why he died. That's how he died. Yeah, it's the same with corona. He died from corona. First of all, we're not sure that everyone's dying from corona. They say he's dying from corona. He's dying from corona. Okay, I'm not going to get into all the conspiracy theories, the politics, the billboard, the balagan. We have no way of knowing. It's all relevant, and no one's interested in my opinion anyway. So I'm not even interested in my opinion on these subjects. So it's boring. It's almost a waste of time. Well, you're wholly odd to the people that say dying from corona. Not dying from corona. It doesn't really matter, okay? They're getting buried in the same earth as everybody else. So it doesn't matter why they died. But the Vortia is, he said a Moedika thing. You know, it says, if you look in the Psukim, it says Adam Rishon lived 970 years and he died. That's a funny way of saying it, no? You should have said Adam Rishon died. And then you tell me his history. You know, he was 970 years old when he died and he left so many children. No, it tells you he was 907 years and he died. So why did he die? What was the cause of death? And on the birth death certificate, what was the cause of death? 970. That was the cause of death. He lived 970 years. His life was up and he died. You know why he died? Because he ran out of delek. He ran out of years. That's what caused the death. The cause of death was the neshama left the guf now. That was the cause of death. Why did he die now? Because his time was up. And that you can't change. Okay. The extreme things you can do to shorten your life, Rahman Islam, there's things you can do to merit more years. I'm not going into all the exceptions, because those are all sugars. But I'm saying, generally speaking, person comes here with an allotted amount of years, the yusurim, the struggles, the battles, everything's going through, they're all misheshes and mibreshes, as we've seen in the morning shir. A call mitukan, if he's going to fall off the roof, is this. It's all misheshes and mibreshes. Obviously, there's another system running based on his shchiyot to that, but the shchiyot cheshbon din b'sheshim hashbreish, because Hashem knew what he was going to do, so the whole system was set up before, and that's how long he's going to live, and that's it, finished. So once again, I think we mustn't focus too much on the corona, whether he dies from the corona, he dies something else. So it happens to be now that corona is in our forefront, but I don't think most people today are dying because of corona. People are still dying from all the things they were dying from before. But obviously, we do think and talk about corona more because the mamish impacting on our lives big time. You know, the flu doesn't impact on your life so much. You get a cold, you get a flu, so you carry on with your life. Or if you're really broken, so you stay at home for 2-3 days. Corona stopped, shut down the entire world. So obviously, it's. But we have to be careful not to get hashkophically mixed up here with this. It's another virus. It's a new thing, so it's novel. And the longer it stays with us, it loses its novelty and we get a bit more ragil. But we have to be careful to put it to its perspective. We have to keep proportion and context here. I'm going to see the other questions here. So this is a big question. What about if you don't keep the rules? Are you putting yourself into a Mokum Sakona? That's number one. And number two is a Chilul Hashem if you don't keep the rules. You don't keep the what they tell you to do. Okay. So it's also to put yourself into Mokum Sakona. That's for sure. The question is, what's called a Mokum Sakona? And some people tell you that dubbing 50 people in a shul without a mosque is not a Mokum Sakona. Some people will tell you that Corona is not a Sakona. So the Lord Nikra Sakona. So they'll tell you, you know, I didn't put myself in Mokum Sakona. Other people will tell you, you have to wear a mask. If you don't wear a mask, they'll tell you it's a Chilul Hashem. Some people tell you, you don't have to wear a mask. For them, not wearing a mask isn't a Chilul Hashem. There's no clarity here. There's no universal answer to answer that question. There's such a bilbul out there. There's such confusion. There's such a lack of knowledge. And that's one of, for me anyway, it's one of the clear things that you see is that Hashem is preparing the ground for Mashiach. Any trust that people had in governments and any trust that people had in the Tsar of Esav, the Koich Veitzim Yodi, the Memshala, is being completely broken down and shattered. A lot of it not for good reasons. A lot of it is coming from some sort of a left-wing liberal agenda, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about, because they'll just create another Saravesa with a Koich Veitzim Yodi. But definitely you see there's definitely you speak to the people in the street, people who had some faith and belief in government, whatever, they're losing it very fast. So Hashem's preparing the groundwork for Mashiach here. There isn't clarity from the medical field. There isn't clarity from the political field. I mean, in this country, you see it clearly. I mean, you see irrational and illogical rules and regulations. So it opens itself up to having conflicting opinions about these things. So how does a Jew survive in such a situation? You know, Godel X says, you have to wear a mask. You don't wear a mask. You put it amongst the Connor. Zilberstein put out a psak recently, very clear, very normal, very healthy. But the Belzerebi, I'm not picking sides here. I'm just what comes to mind. The Belzerebi says, you don't have to wear a mask. So you're going to argue. You're going to say the Belzerebi is Mengechil Hashem. You can't say such a thing. The Belzerebi is not a fool. He's a very withered, up to date. He knows what's going on, whatever. And Reb Zilberstein as well. Reb Zilberstein, the mamash. I'm not choosing sides. One person will tell you, you can't run the bells of Rebbe. Oh, yeah. Another one will tell, but you know, he's Hasidish, and you know, Zilberstein. Another tell you, Reb Zilberstein has a Israeli flag on the roof of his kollel, so because he happens to be in a building, it happens to have an Israeli flag on the building, so you can't rely on him or whatever. So that's idiotic. That's completely stupid. That's silly. That's not how the psak works. You know what I'm saying? Could be an apikairis as well. You say things like that. I don't know, but you certainly you're not clever. You're an idiot for thinking like that. You know that's ridiculous. You have to understand that him and now. So where does that leave me as an individual? That's the problem. Yeah, I'm not really that interested in what the Belzerebi says or what this god or that god says, because I'm relating to me. So that brings us back to a very important mitzvah, the selach harav. You have to have a rov. I mean, let's just take Beit Shemesh, for example. Rav Kornfeld kept the koidl, the shul open, and the koidl's learning, and boom, 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 boom. Across the road, there's another shul that's been locked and closed. Also, highly responsible rov with the qualified and whatever. Okay. This one says you can't. This one says you can. This one. So what do I do as an individual? The individual is left completely hopeless. What are you going to do? No, seriously, ma tose. Rav Chaim said, I didn't hear Rav Chaim say nothing. I never heard him. I never asked him a question. He never gave me an answer. He said klal things. So you have to know how you deal with statements made by the Rabbonim, the Gedolim, when they're talking to the klal. They're not kol kach pashut, how you apply that to your life. So you need a rov. Simple. Person needs a rov. If you're a Belzer Chassid and you do everything according to the Belzer Rebbe, so go with him, do what you want. Gesundheit. You have a Messiah, you're doing what you're doing. You know, you follow Rav Moshe Sternbuch and everything that he says or whatever, sada. But don't do whatever you want and then you find a psak that suits your world view from the Belzer Rebbe. And now, but the Belzer Rebbe lets me do this. Yeah, but he doesn't let you do that. Why are you doing that? No, because that Rav Sternbuch lets me do. But Rav Sternbuch doesn't let you do that. No, but that's Rav Zilberstein matters. So you're running around looking for, basically you've designed a Torah for yourself and you're now finding Rabbonim to pin it on. That's not honest. That's not ethical.
Besides, yes and besides, no. Yes and no. Torah. Because in the same
totally way, unethical. No, one second. Hold on one second, Jonathan. 1 second. You're right. It's not necessarily true. But just 1 second. Let me finish. A person has to have a rov, especially in these confusing times, where it's not even clear what the medical opinion. Normally, you go after rov responsible medical opinion. Today, it's not so possible to know what's rov responsible medical opinion anymore. Some things are easier to know. Some things are harder to know. The problem is the Roev responsible medical opinion will also tell you we don't know that much, and it keeps changing. We keep seeing new things. The research being done hasn't been done for long enough to have clear statistical surveys to base anything on. You know, they did a survey on 100 people, you know, 100 people, Gewaldic, you know. But so, okay, fine. Certainly, you know, for some guy in 10 years' time, he'll do his doctoral thesis on 2,000 people. But in the meantime, the responsible doctors will tell you we don't know that much. I'm not the ones who don't know anything. The ones who don't know anything say they know everything. Yeah? But the ones who really know what they're talking about, the real mumchim in this field will tell you this virus has got us a bit baffled. It's doing weird stuff. Eh? They don't have a clear picture. The Ashgacha Pratis in this virus is... So there's confusion. I'm saying, how do you avoid the confusion? You avoid the confusion by having a Rav. First of all, you have to have a Rebbe anyway. That's a minimum requirement for being a Frum Jew and somebody who listens to you on everything, not just when it suits you. You know, you have to have a Rebbe that that when you have questions, you have disagreements, you only have to disagree. You go to the Rav, what the Rav says, you do. Not because it suits you, because that's the right thing to do. You listen to him.
I think we need to have a shiur on what it means to Asay Lecha Rav.
Okay, good. All right, we could do that. I saw this from Rav Tetz. Rav Tetz's relationship with Rav Moshe Zatzal, Rav Moshe Shapiro Zatzal, was unbelievable. I mean, I know Rav Moshe told Rav Tetz to do things which were mamish. I mean, they were like, I can't imagine how he even dredged up the energy to do it. I mean, there were things that were like big stuff, whatever, that got upheavals to his life, the whole family, moving this, that, whatever. And Rav Moshe, I'll just give you one small example. Rav Tetz told me, he just finished building a house that he put a lot of time and energy into Telstone, and he was living in Eretz Yisrael, and he had family. I mean, I don't know, he had more than 10 kids, Bianora, at that time, still in schools and whatever. And we had a feeling that he could be much more functional in doing Kiruv and what he dedicated his life to in Chutz Laretz. It's such a need to pack up a family, and he's just built this house and to move to Chutz Laretz and whatever. His wife wasn't exactly keen on living Eretz Yisrael, neither was he. But he did feel that he could do more work and be more functional in Chutz Laretz than here. You know, he didn't feel that Eretz Yisrael was a place where he could be impacting in the Kiruv world so much. It's such a need. He had children's schools, the kids were settled. They were there. I mean, you understand that's a Murkav question. Anybody that's moved recently, Shlomo, you'll testify that, Rabbi Ephraim, you'll testify that's a major, major upheaval. That's not a simple thing, you know. I think it's one of the three most stressful things a person could do, you know. So when you see his Rebbe answered him with three words. He wouldn't say another word. And Rav Tetz understood from those three words, and he packed up and he left. He went to England. You know what those three words were? We are soldiers. That's what he said to him. That's a Rebbe. The Rebbe is telling you all your personal considerations and personal instincts are irrelevant. You're a soldier. We're at war. If the war's in England, you go to England.
Yeah.
If the war's not here, why are you here?
But that's like a very cute story. Could pinch you on the cheek, but that's like a special relationship between.
That's what I'm trying. I said to you. I saw.
You know what I mean? Like
that's what I said. One second.
I'm not of a relationship with the Rav.
One second. Everybody has a chiyuv to build a Rebbe. But tell me, Rebbe relationship. There's a chiyuv. That's not a nice thing to do.
There's a lot of chiyuvim that we have to do.
One second. I made a hagdama. One second, Jonathan. It's not helpful what you're doing. If you got questions, let's deal with questions. One second, slowly. Let's put the principles in place, and then we'll grapple with them. When there's this much confusion in the world, it becomes more acute to have the beginnings, at least, of a Rebbe Talmid relationship. Okay, you have to have a Rav. Now, Rav Tetz didn't develop that relationship with Rav Moshe because of it was cute. That was hard work that came with over years of developing that kind of a relationship. But he understood he needed a Rebbe. If you're going to be true to Torah and you're going to get anywhere, yeah, you need a Rebbe. And you meshubed yourself to your Rebbe, because that's what a Rebbe is, and that takes time. It's a relationship. It doesn't happen overnight, for sure. And I made that hakdama that I saw this in the most extreme way, in the most perfect way. I saw that by Rav Tetz. That was my hakdama. So don't come tell me, yeah, but that's by Rav Tetz. That's what I said. That's where I saw it. That's where I learned what this looks like.
Fair enough. And Rav Moshe responded.
When he came to London, he used to stay by Rav Tetz. When Rav Tetz made a chassan, Rav Moshe would fly to London and spend the whole time at the wedding. He didn't do that for many people, I promise you. And he built Rav Tetz, and he gave Rav Tetz, and he made Rav Tetz into what he is today. Fine. I'm using that as an example, because we can learn from that. Now, I don't want to be like him, because I'm saying, but I have this problem as well, because I never really developed and built. When I left South Africa, the relationship kind of shined out a bit. And since the Baruch's moved back, I haven't really picked up the relationship properly because I'm so caught up in the routine of my life that to fit a Rebbe into my busy routine just doesn't like kind of work. And it's all Yetzer and it's Shtus and it's ridiculous, but that's me. I'm not a good example of this. I certainly have Rebbeim and I certainly have a Mahalach and I know how to deal with the confusion about Corona. I'm dealing with one Rav on this subject and I don't ask anybody else. Because there's a lot of confusion. You can get very caught up here. So I chose one Rav and I ask him all my Shalas and whatever he says, that's how I do it. I'm not looking for excuses. It's not a Rebbe, but it is some kind of a kium of a Selech HaRav. So I'm not saying that you have to go off here and build this Talmud Rebbe relationship. I mean, you should do that. That you should do anyway. The first mitzvah in the Torah is Asil Harav, and the first mitzvah in the Torah before that is don't be an idiot when you choose your Rav. You know, to choose somebody. I know that Rav Tetz went to ask a Shad. I think he went to Rav Shach to ask him whether he could make Rav Moshe his Rebbe. You know? Anyway, Rav Tetz says, I'll share on this. Rav Erkowitz says, I'll share on choosing a Rebbe and how you do it, whatever. Okay. I'll share with that. No, the point I'm trying to make, it's getting late, we have to stop. The point I'm trying to make is when, to answer the question, is you know, is wearing a mask, not wearing a mask, wearing a mask, whatever. You have to, should we David in a minion inside, outside, downside, upside? Should I go out? Should, what is the minimum yishtadus that need to be in mask? Should the grandchildren come for Shabbos meals? Shouldn't they? Ba, 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 ba. Day in and day out, you got hundreds of questions every day, just relating to Corona, nothing else. You need to have one clear mahalach. You need to follow one person. Go find a rov, someone that's responsible, someone that's beyond reproach, and ask your shalas to that person. And even though the other people bigger than him, they disagree, whatever, lomashana, you'll get the siyata dishma you need. That's called valid ishtadlis. You know, your rov tells you, listen, when you daven, you wear a mask, blah, blah, blah. There's other rabbonim telling you, you shouldn't wear a mask when you daven. I'm not going into all the different things. Don't choose what suits you. That's what I'm saying. Have a rov, choose the rov that's the right rov for you, and then do what he tells you to do and move on. I've asked this rov Shalas about, you know, the kids coming to visit, whatever. I didn't always like the answers, you know. But that's it. We did what he said, and Baruch Hashem, I did what he said. And sometimes he was machmir, sometimes he was makel. Chazal, I don't go into that now. But even when your rov tells you to be makel, when he should be machmir, even there, that's good. When I was driving, when I went into Bidud, the very first Bidud in Elul, I was driving with a certain Rav from Tifrach who comes to Beit Shemesh every day with me. So I went to ask the Rav, this guy wants to travel with me. I don't want people in my car. This guy's a Magid Shirin, Yeshiva Gitane. How long is it going to take before he gets Corona, you know? I'm not an idiot. So I went to ask my Rav, can I take him? I was a big mitzvah. Otherwise, you know what it's, you know what a schlep it is to get from Tifrach to Beit Shemesh without a car? You lo poshut. So Rob said, you can take him. If he sits in the back, you sit in front. You drive with the window slightly open and you both wear masks. That's what he said. Fine. Okay. I wasn't happy with the answer. I would have much been happy if he told me, what are you talking about? You idiot. You're going to drive with somebody who's a yeshiva. Goes, no, no ways. No. I would have been, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to hear. I said, yeah, you can take him. So I was a bit disappointed. Anyway, the first day we go, he wasn't wearing a mask. He was wearing one of these plastic shield things, you know, which I know personally is a loze klum. So it doesn't help him, and I wasn't exactly feeling that safe with him sitting in the back with us. So I went back to the Rav, and I told him. And I was for sure he was going to tell me, no, you must tell him to put on a proper mask. He said, no, it's a percent enough to tell him. That was on Sunday, yeah? It was before Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We traveled Thursday. Okay? He phones to tell me he's not coming in. He's not feeling so well. Thursday night, he phones to tell me he's got corona. He just got his test back, his chiuvi. He was in the car Wednesday, Tuesday. For sure, he was already... Okay, and I was in the car with him for four days, going back and forth, 2 hours every day. Okay, and I can tell you, I was nervous. I mean, I went into Bidud for 2 weeks. I was pretty nervous, and Baruch Hashem, I didn't get it. And not because he couldn't madbik anybody; his whole family got it, and like I don't know, his whole shia got it, half the yeshiva got it from him. So he had the ability to spread it. You have to listen to your rov. You have to do what your rov says, and you get siyata dishmaya. Now, you're right, Jonathan, until you are ready to start developing the Rebbe-Talmud relationship like Avtetz had with his Rebbe and Mavatl yourself and Meshabed yourself or whatever, I'm not talking about that now. That you have to do anyway, but not kashur to this Vaad. In this Vaad, I'm saying, since there's so much confusion and since there's an opinion for everything out there, I promise you now, whatever you want, you can find an opinion to suit you. But we don't want to suit me. I don't want to be limited by me. I want to be able to go beyond me. I want it to be able to be bigger than me. Kolzman, I'm finding heterim that just suit me, then I'm just me. I'm always going to be limited just by me. I'm never going to go beyond me. That's why I need a rov in this particular subject. And it's not 100% honest because I need a rov in everywhere, you know. But I choose which rov I go. You know? But within the corona, I'm saying I'm trying to just be a little bit with a little bit of integrity here in the corona. One person and ask Mashalas to him. Once he asked me to ask a doctor. He said, ask a doctor what he thinks. He said, but ask someone who's got a Beru Shamayim. I found Dr. Bortz in Telstone, with Tatz's brother-in-law, who's a big Talmud Chochem and a big Yerushamayim and happens to be an unbelievable doctor as well. Highly qualified, one of the best the highest graduating class that came out of the South African University when South Africa was the leading medical school in the world, a very highly qualified doctor, big honor, big Yirah Shamayim. He said, ask a doctor, ask Dr. Bortz, and he told me what he said, and that was it. And he said, whatever the doctor says, you can do, you don't have to come back to me. But other than that, I've listened to whatever he said, and Baruch Hashem, you know. So also, I was in Bidud. I said, what about a minion? He said, you can go and daven in my minion if you want. Just, you know, stand a bit outside. He said, Bidud doesn't mean being locked in a room. Bidud means not being able to get close to anybody that you can madbik them if, God forbid, you've got it. I davened by him on Yom Kippur. I went into Bidud, Erev Yom Kippur. My daughter got Corona, Erev Yom Kippur. I went into Bidud. So I said, what am I going to do? What, Yom Kippur? He said, you can daven with me. Daven night. And go home, you know. I couldn't have it in my normal seat, which was like in front with everybody else. We sat like the whole minions outside anyway. It's all his whole minions in his backyard. So I davened a little bit away, but I listened to him and I did what he said, and that was it. You know, and I think that's very important, with, especially with this corona thing, with the confusion and the bilbul, and the, you don't want to get caught up in all the politics, you know. You don't want to be thinking bad about Jews, you know. Oh, he's a chiddul Hashem. Slow down, you know. He's a chiddul Hashem, you're a chiddul Hashem. No one's a chiddul Hashem, whatever. There is a chiddul Hashem going on out there. No, you know, we're not blind, we're not stupid. I don't want to make a chest to that. I want to do what Hashem wants me to do and focus on my chiyuvim. The only way I can do that responsibly today is by having one Rav who's gonna guide me through this whole thing with his opinion. And that's it. Find someone that works for you. You all daven in a shul, you all have a Rav. Those of you that daven in the Gro, you are Ashraf Kornfeld. Those of you daven by Rav Goldstein, the Baruch Hashem, there's no shortage of big people in Beit Shemesh. In South Africa, you've got people to rely on as well, Jonathan. And you have a Talmud Chacham, go ask him Yishalas and follow it through all the way. I think that's more important, how to get through Yasein and stop looking at the news and the papers and this one said it, this one said it there, because whatever opinion, you'll find 50 negatives. You'll drive yourself with sugar. It's not worth it. Just find out what the responsible thing for you to be doing is. Because I'll tell you now, there's things that are more dangerous than corona. But Bidud can also be dangerous. You know, loneliness can cause physical symptoms that can be fatal, Rahmana Litzlan. It's very hard. That's what makes it so difficult, you know. It's a very difficult juggle. You know, you can die from hunger also. You know, it happened in South Africa, Jonathan, I'm sure you know. The lockdown people died from hunger. Died from starvation, you know, because they don't have credit cards and they don't have deep freezers stacked up with food for 6 months. In India and these places, I'm sure people that don't have food, they died. But they were supposed to die from starvation. That's the Ashkofa. We know that. They didn't die from corona. They died from starvation. Hashem manipulated the world in such a way that that's what had to happen. But I'm saying, as far as the decision-making process, how you open up, how you deal with corona, how you lock down, don't lock down, it's an impossible situation. They're not pushed. Juggling impossible conflicting priorities. So that's very difficult to deal with, you know. It's really, really not simple, you know. So I don't, thank God, I don't have that problem. There's no one's asking me my opinion. No one's interested in my opinion. There's nobody that's making any like big life decisions out there, you know. Netanyahu hasn't found me once to ask me what I think. Yeah, but you're not making life decisions for the government. So I'm saying Netanyahu never found me. Ramaphosa never phoned me, and I'm very disappointed with Bibi. He should at least ask me what I think, you know. Anyway, no, they don't care what I think. So you get on with your life, you know. You lead your life, but you want to lead your life Torah tuned. So then make sure that you have a Rav who's somebody that's reliable. And if he doesn't know, he'll at least be able to say, I don't know, and he'll take it further for you. That's how Klal Yisrael always lived. And I think that answers the question. I hope I've answered all the questions. If I haven't, just send me an email with the revised questions or questions from this discussion, whatever. I'd be interested. I really enjoyed the questions. So I would have wanted to have printed that have in front of me because by the time I whatever, it just doesn't. Anyway, but that's the vort. The vort is doctor, medical. You have to make your status. You have to do what you have to do and then stop worrying about the corona. The corona can't kill anybody. There's a hand holding the stick. We have to stop looking at the stick. We have to look at the hand holding the stick. Rav Avram Shaul said, there's a Rabbeinu Shalaylam that fed the world. There's a Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world. It's not Edelstein, and it's not Cuomo in America, and it's not de Blasio, and it's not Netanyahu, and it's not Ramaphosa. There's a Rabbeinu Shalaylam, yeah, that runs the world. That's who we have to deal with. And the way you deal with that properly is by following Torah opinions. There's so many conflicting and confusing Torah opinions. Find one that works for you and stick to it. That's all. Because Hashem can't have partners against you then. Okay.
We appreciate it.
Anyway, I'll wait for the follow-up email, and then Metzachem, next week we'll get back to Chovas Lavovas, but I just thought it was just, I enjoyed the questions, and they were more oira, a lot of things I've been wanting to say for a long time. So,
great. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. I still want you to give a share on the whole thing of making a Rav and exactly the criteria.
I'm going to have a hard time doing that. I'll tell you why, because I haven't done it myself, and I really, it's one of the biggest regrets I have in my life, that I never really did it properly. No, I've had unbelievable teachers. I mean, I've been blessed with the most unbelievable teachers. Those of you know Rav Grossner, Shlomo Yulte, Yonatan, Rav Baruch was an unbelievable gift to me. Rav Tetz, learning Chavrusa with Rav Tetz that many years, and then Rav Israel, you know, the unbelievable cash I had with Rav Taube, and Yain Tifrach as well, you know. So Rav Shlomo's also met some of the big people, Yain Tifrach, Rav Ben Menachem, Rav Yankov, that I've been zeichet to have keshes with, Rav Yaakovson, you know, Rebecca, unbelievable teacher that have had such an impact on my life, but I was never able to take one of them and say, okay, that's it. You know, boom, that's my Rebbe. Even though I refer to Baruch as my Rebbe, because really he is, but as I said, when I moved to Eretz Yisrael, the relationship, Kolkman, I was in South Africa, that was it. Baruch was mamash my Rebbe, that's why I call him my Rebbe. When I moved here 25 years ago, that slipped. Now that he's back, I haven't really picked it up, and I do tend to, you know, I have been a bit wishy-washy about it. So to give the share on something that I myself am not, you know, not even Bichlal Shaykh, I'm a bit nervous about that. So that's why I said, Roberkovitz has a good share on this, and Tatsan has spoken about this. So, you know, I don't know. All right, remind me in about 3 years, maybe, on my lifestyle.
Just think about it. You don't always talk about everything that you do. And also,
no, I think that's in learning. Job. That's what I'm saying. In learning, yeah, but I'm saying to talk about something that I really regret. It's one of the biggest regrets I have in my life, you know, that I really didn't make that. You know, we all walk around with regrets. We all have burnt dreams, you know. 100%. I'm not miserable, but I'm saying it's something that that really I feel I didn't make the effort. It was lazy. I was just posh it lazy. To make the Rebbe rings, you have to really, you know, you've got to really push it, you know, you've got to work hard at it. I would go to a guy and say, you know, I want to speak to you. Have you got time to learn with me? And the guy says to me, no. Not now, come back to me again. You go back three times. Afterwards, it's cheers, goodbye. Somebody told me yesterday that they built a kesher with a certain rov. I said, how did you get a kesher with him? He said, it took me 2 months. Every day I went to him and asked him, do you have time to learn with me? And he said, no, not today. 2 months, every day. And after 3 days, I'm gone. I've done my ishtadlis. This guy stuck it out for 2 months. Eventually, Rov said, yeah, come to my house at 7 o'clock tonight. And from there, that was it. How did Rav Leuchter Bigel build his relationship with Rav Volbi? I mean, unbelievable. You know, how did Rav Tetz build his relationship? How was Rav Moshe? Rav Moshe told me, I once asked Rav Moshe something. He said, Rav Tetz, you can rely on him for everything. Whatever he says, it's kind of like I said. Rav Moshe didn't say that. Rav Moshe didn't waste one word. Rav Moshe didn't say that. A lot of people wrote Svarim, you know, Rav Moshe Svarim, whatever that, I don't think, the one guy wrote, I saw the other day in Eish Kodesh, there's a sefer written of Rav Moshe's Torah by somebody who claims to be a Talmud Rav Moshe. He spelled Rav Moshe's name wrong. I said to Rav Smiles, this guy's a Talmud of Moshe, doesn't know how to spell his Rebbe's name. It wasn't a printing error, it was in three places. There's Laura of Moshe's name. Look at Rav Tetz's Sefer and see how Rav Moshe signs his name in the Skomi gave to Rav Tetz's Sefer. You'll see it's got an aleph at the end. He was Shapira, not Shapiro. And this guy writes Rav Moshe Shapiro. He was his Talmud. What was a Talmud is book? You should at least know your Rebbe's name. A lot of people out there that say that Rav Moshe's Talmidim, but Rav Tetz, I know that he's Rav Moshe's Talmid because Rav Moshe told me he has a Talmid. You can rely on him as if I said it. That's a Talmid. You know? So but that takes a lot of work, investment, going after the guy, checking him, trying, you know, being rebuffed. You know, it's like in Star Wars, you know, how did Luke Skywalker become a Talmud? You know, how did he become a Jedi? Because he had to, you know, he had that whole Rebbe-Talmud relationship, you know, that was fraught with frustration and anguish and not understanding. And, you know, that's the way it is, you know. The athlete doesn't always appreciate the coach, you know. It's the same in Torah, you know. There was a person, he said he once went to meet Rav Moshe. The first time I went to meet Rav Moshe, he said Rav Moshe was just so unbelievably nice and warm and friendly or whatever. And he was mamash taken to Rav Moshe, so he became a Talmud. He started learning about Talmud. And Rav Moshe started treating him mamash. He would just, anything he would say, Rav Moshe would just frazzle him. I don't know, you guys who knew Rav Moshe, you were terrified to open your mouth in front of him. But that told me 3 years he sat in a vade, he was too scared to open his mouth for Rav Moshe because you get frazzled there. You say something half a millimeter wrong, he would just burn you. So this guy went to one of Moshe's limits and said, I don't understand. Moshe was so nice to me and friendly and whatever. Now every time I open my mouth, he bashes me. And I said, yeah, because now you're a Talmud. He's trying to build you. When you were just a visitor, Ramesh was always nice to me when I met him, the few occasions I met him. It was very sweet. You know, he didn't beat me up because I said stupid things, and I'm sure I did because I'm not a Talmud. So what's he got to worry about? Become a Talmud. Oh, now you got to build the God, you know, and whatever. That's another story. There were guys, Baruch Hashem, the guys in there, were some of the guys, Alon, for example, was able to build an unbelievable relationship with Reb Zelig. And, you know, whatever, there were opportunities to build those kind of relationships, and the ones that made the effort. Alon spent his whole afternoon on the phone bugging Reb Zelig, you know, what about this, what about this, whatever. But the Rashi says this, and the Toy says, no, no, everyone could have done that, you know. I could have done it myself. I was paying his salary, for sure, it was behind me sometime. But I never picked up the phone because I'm lazy. So, you know, so those opportunities, they get wasted. I'm saying don't waste them, that's all. Okay, Rabbi, so it's gone way over time. I apologize, but all right, we'll see. I'm really looking forward to seeing the follow-up email. Anyway, have a good week, and we'll see you again.
Take care. Thanks, you too. Lots to think about. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.